What the hell is elder care? We had a wonderful session the last time with one of your coworkers, Cheryl. Do you want to just give us a brief summary about that?
Yeah, I thought Cheryl really hit the nail on the head about addiction and aging last session. I thought she was phenomenal. And like I had mentioned before, she is the top in her field on elderly and addiction. And it was, she talked about, what was it, ketamine?
Yes.
That ketamine. Was yes. Coming through as one of the most used medication or drug by seniors. Am I correct?
Correct.
She mentioned that. Okay. But I know today you have brought a guest. So who do we have here?
Well, as you know, and the viewers probably know, it's all about me and my guest, Kate. But this is really a special guest because we have worked professionally in several different environments, and personally, our families know one another, and she's just an incredibly bright individual. She's the executive director of Gallagher Hospice, which is where I retired from.
Right.
But she is an LCSW, and both of us started when we were much younger. Sorry, Megan, much younger. And we started in medical social work, and we worked our way up, which allowed us to work together. But I have invited Megan here. We've talked off and on, and we've woven the subject of hospice, and I know you did an excellent session when your aunt died, talking about the collaborative efforts in a skilled facility with hospice
right. For
her to die with wonderful end-of-life peaceful care. And I brought Megan in because I think I needed an expert, and so do the listeners. I love to call you viewers because you can't see me. But I like the listeners to hear what palliative is. I think palliative care is something people hear about, don't know, don't understand, don't ask questions, and don't utilize. I think that probably sums up, which is why Megan's going to start out, and we're going to touch a little bit on how hospice and palliative referrals get a little mixed up, and that doesn't always benefit the patient and the family. So welcome, Megan Anderson.
Welcome, Megan.
Why, thank you, Jane, and thank you, Kate. It is such an honor to be with the two of you, two social workers who I admire and have learned from. As Jane mentioned, we go way back. I, of course, was the younger one.
This is an aging podcast.
With all jokes aside, learned a great deal working alongside Jane, and so I'm honored to be here tonight.
Why don't we start out, if it's okay with you, and feel free to share with the audience anything that could be beneficial for their learning, but start out what actually is the definition of palliative care.
I am glad you asked that, Jane, because as you started, you said it's very confusing. People don't know what it is. In its most simplest terms, to palliate means to alleviate symptoms. The definition, a broader definition of palliative care, it's specialized medical care for anyone with a serious illness. It focuses on relief from symptoms, pain or distress from serious illness, whatever the diagnosis. The goal of palliative care is to improve quality of life. And that could be a lot of different things for a lot of people. But it's provided by a team of doctors, nurses, social workers, and they provide an extra layer of support in taking a holistic approach to alleviating burdensome symptoms. The thing about palliative care is that it can be done at any point in time during a serious illness, chronic illness, acute illness, an illness that people may be getting treatment for with the goal of cure, but during an illness, when they have symptom burden, and symptoms could be pain, nausea, vomiting, agitation, depression, anxiety, all of those things get addressed by palliative care specialists. And that's sort of a broad definition for palliative care.
Can I ask a question in terms of, because, you know, just listening to all of that makes you think, why wouldn't everybody take advantage of that? That's got a chronic illness or what we call exacerbations of an illness, which pain control is primary. But how do you get a palliative referral versus like a home care referral versus a hospice referral?
Well, that's the question. You can get a palliative referral. Most often, they happen in a hospital setting. More than 50%, well, now I think the statistic is more like greater than 80% of hospitals with 150 beds will have palliative care of some sort in the hospital. So you can receive a consult from a palliative care physician in the hospital. That usually has to be ordered by the primary physician or treating physician. You can also get a palliative referral for the community, but what that looks like varies from program to program, facility to facility, state to state, because there is no single palliative care definition. So program may vary widely. Basically, if you've seen one palliative care program, you've sort of seen one palliative care program because they don't all work exactly the same. Part of that is because there isn't a specific funding or reimbursement
for just
something
gonna get into
called
that.
Palliative care. So there are a lot of community-based palliative care programs too, in addition to a hospital-based program. They vary widely. Across the country, more than half of those programs are provided by hospice, hence the confusion that palliative care is hospice. There are also community-based palliative care programs. There's palliative care done in doctor's offices that might have a team of specialists that can provide that. And there are some big programs that insurance companies may be supporting to provide palliative care to their patients in the homes. For example, years ago, I had the privilege of working for Aspire, which is one of the nation's largest home-based palliative care programs. And the design for that model was physician, nurse practitioner, or PA, or what we call an advanced practice practitioner, nurses, social workers. And that was home-based. So those patients got visits in the home by anyone on that team, depending on what the need was. There are programs in a skilled nursing facility that may be a palliative care physician, nurse, or social worker who's seeing folks in those facilities. But all of these programs are designed a little bit differently depending on how they are funded.
So I have always thought that palliative care is the, like, for example, Annette Capozzoli talked about speech therapy, and she said that was the forgotten therapy, right? Because not everybody would know to order it. And I thought when my aunt had dementia, it wasn't about her speech, but it was about her swallowing. So when I'm talking to my clients on the phone and I suspect that we have severe arthritis or we have dementia, or we have criteria that meets palliative care, I will mention that. And I will say to my clients, it's another set of eyes and ears on your loved one. And there's never anything wrong with that. And they can come in and make a decision on whether or not this is the right medication, or is there something else out there that could help them? Is that correct?
Absolutely. It is an additional layer of care.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't supersede the care of the primary team. But for example, maybe the palliative care physician will take a look at a patient who has specialists, an oncologist, PCP, maybe a surgeon also involved, maybe several different players who are working with this patient, but no one's really putting the whole picture together. And if they have side effects from medications or nausea and vomiting or pain that isn't being addressed, the palliative care doc is really taking a look at everyone's level of care,
mm-hmm.
and making some suggestions.
Right.
They're also doing it from a real holistic point of view. Does the care that you're getting align with the goals you have for yourself. And that is a piece in medicine that often gets overlooked or forgotten. We are treating an illness, but are we treating the whole person and matching their goals? What do they want with this treatment?
I agree.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
I agree.
It's really assistance with any kind of complex care management. And mm-hmm. so that might mean managing escalating symptoms such as pain or shortness of breath or anxiety, like I said. It might be that pharmacological management, someone taking a look at, well, geez, one specialist ordered this and one specialist ordered that. Those two specialists weren't really talking to each other. And now we've got adverse side effects from the polypharmacy that maybe we can back down on one or two to get you a better effect. Someone who's looking at the whole picture of things.
It's kind of like they're the team leader, right? Because like you just mentioned, you have two specialists, they're discussing, but maybe they're not discussing or unsure of really what is going on. But when you're in the home, you get to see the whole environment, right? You get to see exactly what is going on. And I love that holistic approach. Jane?
Exactly. One thing that I know people will ask, because I got asked it year after year after year, how does the insurance pay for this? Does that actually go under, because it's not the hospice program, which has a whole of their own Medicare regulation criteria and to cover it, but is it under the home care benefit?
Great question, Jane. And again,
it varies.
It varies. Hospice is a, you know, per diem, it's a Medicare covered hospice benefit. The palliative care world, and part of the problem is they haven't gained traction because it's not reimbursed in that same way. It's a little bit more like a fee for service. If you have a physician visit, they can bill for certain aspects of that. But the holistic portion of the program isn't an insurance benefit covered in the same way that hospice is robustly covered. So each palliative care program does it a little differently. Some programs will offer it as an adjunct to their service. For example, under a home health benefit, you may be receiving nursing, PT, OT, but in need of some palliative care. And some home health programs may have either a physician specialist, nurse or social worker who are part of that team. It's not necessarily reimbursed under the home health benefit, but they add it on, like Gallagher does, because they know it's the right thing in terms of patient care. Some insurance companies are paying for palliative visits, and it's just paid for patients and families. It's an extra service within a lot of the Medicare Advantage plans are doing that because they see it as an added value to patient care. But it's not reimbursed in and of itself.
See, you just mentioned something which made me think of when you just said insurance companies are seeing it as valuable to families. Wouldn't you rather pay for a team visit, a palliative team visit, as opposed to an ER visit because symptoms are out of control or nausea and vomiting can't be controlled or a family can't control somebody's agitation with a new medicine? It would make sense that they would want to do that. But again, sometimes what we think is an insurance makes sense. They don't think so. Right. So, right.
Well, that is the way it's going, though. They see it as part of value-based care. And it would prevent things like acute exacerbations that are unnecessary. First of all, it's better for the patient. So we don't have those spikes in complex care problems. And for people who have a chronic illness, where we know they're going to have some ups and downs, or a serious illness that is so complex that they're getting all kinds of high-end treatments that are going to cause, you know, potentially adverse side effects, why wouldn't we want to give them the best shot at managing those symptoms? The aim of palliative care, again, to alleviate symptoms, to make it easier. Look, serious illness is hard, And when we look at, when you talk about spend, and I know people don't like to talk about spend, but it's what kind of spend? Are we going to spend our money in healthcare on the right kinds of services at the right time versus a huge spend in the emergency rooms and maybe burdensome, unnecessary care that didn't alleviate symptoms, it didn't help with longevity, and it didn't prevent anything, which is the aim of palliative care, is to walk alongside whatever treatment someone is getting and make it better, make it less burdensome.
I think people this day and age, the first thing they worry about is what's paid for and what's not paid for. And I think people stay away from that, just like people stay away from hospice because you die. Instead of thinking of all the life sustaining things that can be done for the quality of life for the remainder of months, they just think you're going to die in 2 days.
And I think that is what keeps people from the idea of palliative and or hospice, right? Is it, we're all afraid of it. And the three of us sitting here are very comfortable talking about aging, and that one thing we know for sure is that we are all going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You or I, that may not have an illness right now, that unknown may be a little bit different. But if someone has a serious illness, they have a life expectancy, or they have a condition that they know they're going to get ongoing treatment. The problem is people get afraid that palliative means hospice and then hospice means I'm dying. Hospice is always palliative care because hospice is always going to alleviate symptoms. But palliative care is not always hospice. There's a lot of pediatric palliative care programs. You can get it at any time in an illness. Again, you may be seeking a cure and you may get that. You may have a terrible cancer that you're going through really rough treatments for, and the aim is to get better, and you do. But you may benefit from palliative care when you're in the throes of it so that you can get symptom relief. Or it may be that it is a little closer to hospice in that it is someone with an advanced illness or an end-stage illness, but maybe it's more like 2 years before you're even looking at a terminal diagnosis. The difference being hospice, the prognosis is 6 months or less. That's the difference. But in palliative care, there's no prognostication in terms of when it's appropriate at any point in time in the illness. So why wouldn't we take advantage?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
exactly.
Why wouldn't we want that quality of care? That's, for me, that's what it comes down to, whether it's palliative or it's going to be hospice, but it's all about quality of care, right? That's
exactly.
Am I getting the best care? Am I on the right medication? Are they treating me the way that I want to be treated? I mean, I still go back to that holistic approach. I think that is key because sometimes that individual, especially if they're an older individual, is forgotten about. Or because they're of a certain age, well, we'll just give you this medication and we'll see how it works, right? I'm not saying it happens all the time, but sometimes our seniors are overloaded on medication. And that's when I think it's great to have palliative care come in and take a look at all the meds and to see if that's really needed. Am I correct?
Absolutely. And it's that complex care management. It's also helping them navigate difficult decisions.
Right.
I was talking with, you know, a family a few weeks ago, and they were in that position. They're not ready for hospice. There's not yet a prognostication, but they're saying, but when is the right time for palliative care? And I ask, what's going on? A lot of symptom, nausea, shortness of breath, some things that someone could help with. Some real questions about treatment. One physician telling them this, another physician telling them that, and not knowing what the next best steps are. Well, if there were a palliative care team involved, whether that's the social worker, the nurse, or the physician, to have a look at that and really walk them through those different treatment options, which are very complex. And sometimes we're in and out of a doctor's office really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You get all that information, then you get home and you want to sort through it.
who better to help you sort through what right. that treatment means, what the pros and cons of each might look like, mm-hmm. and then help you align that with your goals of care. Mm-hmm. And just navigating the complexities of our healthcare system and the healthcare treatment options. Palliative care helps with all of that.
Right. That's mm-hmm. wonderful.
Would you do me a favor, Megan? I know that I'm going to sound like this is so simple, but spell palliative for our listeners, because what we're trying to do, and this goes back to Kate and I back in July of 2023 when we had the goals for our podcast,
that's right.
you know, to educate and empower. If they are educated on this, write this word down and keep it so that you can always ask your practitioner, your oncologist, your cardiologist, your physiatrist, anybody that has had an illness, an ongoing illness, a chronic illness. This is the word you want to remember.
Palliative. PALLIATIVE. Palliative care. And again, the thing to remember about that is it can be an extra layer of support at any time during the course of any type of illness.
Excellent.
I agree. Thank you.
Kate, do you have any other questions? I think Megan explained everything.
Oh, I thought you were, yes.
Excellently.
Absolutely.
I have no other questions either.
You know, one of the things we didn't say too, which just to add, just when people get afraid of the idea of palliative care, there's been a lot more studies in recent years about the effects of palliative care, especially in the oncology world. And people get fearful that, well, if I'm having palliative care, does that mean they're not going to give me the same level of care as someone in active treatment without palliative care? And in fact, studies have shown with palliative care, often the life expectancy is longer. The symptom burden is less, and people feel that they have a better quality of life. So much so that they replicated that study often in lung cancer patients, but many cancer programs throughout the country are looking at automatically including palliative care throughout the course of illness.
You just hit on a thing that too, and I think when you listed all those things that are benefits of somebody having palliative care, let's stop second guessing. When we second guess and we don't utilize, and how many times have we heard, well, you know, we should have and we could have done it sooner. We should have thought about this. Let's take a look at it, be educated as to how this can help someone.
Absolutely. So I think that if you're thinking about, you know, you have a loved one or you yourself are experiencing or have met the criteria that you've spoken about, Megan, you know, contact your local hospice agency and see if they offer palliative care. PALLIA.
Everybody leave me alone. Everybody leave me alone about spelling this, okay?
I feel like I'm in Catholic school again. But I have to say, I want to thank you very much, Megan.
Thank you.
And listeners, I want to talk a little bit about ageism. I'm about to turn 64 tomorrow. And so with turning 64, I accept it. I own it. But I am always looking at discounts for seniors, all of those things. I'm always researching. And so I just happened to be on Instagram today after work, and I found this group. It's called We Are Ageist.
Oh.
And it's wonderful. And it's all about positivity, you know, in aging. And the guide to living well. And so what I heard today from Jamie Lee Curtis was, own what you think and feel. And we talked about that before, owning it. She stated 65, and I'm going to insert 64 is a moment of reflection and excitement, acceptance, and own what you think and feel is maturity. And so Jamie Lee Curtis, thank you.
What a wonderful sentiment, right?
Yeah, right. And also what I found out with this We Are Ageist is that there is a, you know how there's a, what is it, AmeriCorps for young adults? There's AmeriCorps for seniors, and I guess they're doing a lot of work for veterans, which is great. And one last quote I have to say before I hand this all over to Jane, because she has a story for us. Pablo Picasso. We don't grow older, we grow riper.
I like that.
So,
and viewers, I just want to say, everybody give Kate a happy birthday, because it's her birthday tomorrow.
Happy
speaking
birthday,
of the aging
Kate.
Process. But happy birthday, partner.
Thank you.
I found something, and again, when I had mentioned Megan and I had worked together before, one of the pleasures we had was education, and this was not just education to viewers such as yourself, but education to professionals, and a lot of that was refining of skills, but mostly respect. Mm-hmm. We were trying to always have individuals at home, in a nursing home, in the assisted living environment, be respected. I used this when I was an administrator for teaching in long-term care, and Megan and I used this for our continuing education so often, because we just wanted people, if you can't think, what if this was my parents or my aunt and uncle in a facility or growing old? How about just remembering what your parents told you and your basics when you were growing up? But this is a little bit of a poem, and what I'd like you to do is just close your eyes for a few minutes. It's not long, but it's called The Crabby Old Man. And it is about a gentleman in a nursing home. And it's, what do you see, nurses? What do you see? What are you thinking when you're looking at me? You see a crabby old man who's not very wise, uncertain of habit, and how about those faraway eyes? Maybe I dribble my food, maybe I don't answer. When you say in a loud voice, can you please try harder? Who seems not to notice all the things that you do? Forever losing something, whether it's a sock or a shoe. Resisting or not, let's do as you will. With bathing, feeding, it's a long day to fill. Is that what you're thinking? Is that what you see? Come on, nurses and caregivers, you're not looking at me. I'll tell you who I am as I sit here so still. I'll do what you're bidding, and I'll eat at your will. But I was a small child at age 10, with a father and mother, brother and sisters, and we all loved one another. A young boy is 16 with wings on his feet, dreaming that soon a lover he will meet. A groom at 20, my heart gives a leap, remembering the vows, and I promised that I will keep. At 25, I have a young of my own who needs me to guide and help a secure, happy home. A man at 30, my young now grow fast, bound to each other with wonderful ties that have lasted. At 40, my young sons are grown and they're all gone, but my woman's beside me, so I don't mourn. At 50, once more, babies play around at my knees. Again, we know children, my loved one and me. Dark days are upon me. My wife is now dead. I look at the future and just shudder with dread. For my young are all rearing, young of their own. I think of the years and all the love that I've known. And now I'm an old man and nature is cruel. Everybody makes jest of all age and often to look like a fool. The body, it crumbles. All the grace and vigor depart. There is now a stone where I had a big heart. But inside this old carcass, a young man still dwells. Now and again, my battered heart will swell. I remember the joys. I remember the pain. I'm loving and living life all over again. I think of the years, all too few, gone too fast. But I accept the stark fact that nothing can last. So people, open your eyes. Open and see. I'm not a crabby old man. Look closer and see me.
Well, that one, I just kind of want to cry about that. That's very emotional. It brings back a lot of memories. I just personal, when my mom, during her last hospitalization, I said to the nurse, don't forget who she is.
That's right.
You know, she's a mom of two daughters. Her husband is deceased. You know, she wanted to be a nurse and she had two grandchildren. Don't ever forget that. Don't treat her like the frail 67-year-old female that I know that you see in that bed.
That's it. And just like Megan and I, when we used to really focus on sensitivity training.
Right.
I heard you, but are we all listening?
Right. I agree.
You know, and all three of us are clinicians at this table that have lived it and seen it personally and professionally. And I almost cry every time I read this. I haven't read it in a couple of years, Megan, and it still is. Yes. So all of you out there, I'm going to tell you, I don't care if you're 54, you're 64, you're 94. You are valued. You are important. And as I said in our opening thing, when I first was retired and I felt like a non-entity, I fight every day to make sure nobody in the aging process is a non-entity.
Well said.
That's it. Very well said.
We will be back in touch with everybody. We are thinking of some things that we are going to do of interest and of importance to the viewers. So we will be back in touch with you and we'll call it our surprise session.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And we just want to shout out to Adam Sherman, my son. He's been wonderful in getting these podcasts out for us. I know he's extremely busy, but we appreciate his time. And on Amazon, Apple, and Spotify.
Adam is my man. I'm going to tell you something. We couldn't have done this without him. Kate and I just sit here and talk. I just sit here and talk, actually, and Adam does all the work, you know. But right. That's what they let the oldest one go a little bit. Adam's very kind to me. But thank you, Kate, and thank you, Adam, and thank you, Megan. Everybody take care till next session.
Take care, and, you know, enjoy your day.
Stay safe and enjoy the days, right.
Take care.